Hey everyone, Jordan Angeli back with another episode of the U.S. Soccer Podcast. This week, Charlie was able to sneak into the very busy schedule of our guest. He had to do it without me. I wasn't able to join, but I know that he did a great job. Can't wait for you guys to listen to this one. So I am happy to introduce Charlie's conversation with two-time Olympic gold medal winner, Angela Huglies.
This is crazy. This is absolutely insane. Such at a loss for words. I mean, I'll find them, don't worry.
Do I like playing against adversity? Man, I just like playing, period.
I'm shocked and I'm so proud of our guys, man. Unbelievable.
Putting the crest on every single time means something to me.
Hi, I'm Heather O'Reilly and you are listening to the U.S. Soccer Podcast.
Angela, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic, Charlie. There's a lot of great things going on, so I'm feeling good. How are you doing?
Fantastic. I mean, for you, you get to make a debut on the podcast, which we're super pumped about. And you know, a woman like you these days, I don't know how you are able to have the bandwidth to do everything that you do. A real estate agent, you provide analysis on various networks, whether it's ACC network, whether you know it's the professional game, men's and women's. You run a leadership academy. You're one of the members of a star-studded ownership group of Angel City FC, the Angel City FC, and you're a wife and a mother to two adorable kids. So, how do you stay organized? What are your tricks?
I don't do everything all at once. The wife and mother thing, I always do. But yes, it's and I'm definitely scaling back now that I have my role with Angel City FC. You know, obviously went from being a founding investor to now working full time with the incredible organization and team. So, but you know, very, very honored to still have the ability to call some games and be a part of the sport in that way as well. So it's, you know, we learn time management from being an athlete. So I think that's been definitely helpful.
Well, you've done a terrific job.
Thanks.
We know you have some big tournament experience with the U.S. Women's National Team, and we'll get there. But Jordan and I love to hear first cap stories. That's one thing is a must. Do you remember that first cap? Well, the lead up to it, the build up to it, and then what happened during your camp?
Yeah, you know, I honestly vaguely remember it. I do remember like the highlights because I played as more of a defensive midfielder, withdrawn midfielder. And I think for me to be able to have some experience, I had been called up into camps before that first cap and, you know, again, was familiar at least with the team and the system and kind of the culture. So that was actually, I think, positive to help for that first cap in that game. But I think also that role was, it felt comfortable to me and really played to the strengths that I had in terms of the distribution and being able to see the field from that point of view. So the highlights I took was, you know, April Heinrichs was a coach at the time and, you know, she gave me high praise of, you know, really playing that role well. And I remember Mia also giving me some positive feedback after that game too. So, you know, anytime you're suiting up for your country and the national team is an honor, but I think you have the extra nerves and the excitement that go on with that first cap. So, you know, it was exciting to, I think, finally, be on the field and, you know, have that experience.
Do you remember the team you played and the date?
No.
No.
I literally will have to go back to like,
what?
I know.
April 27th, 2002.
You tell me. Yeah.
Okay. And you and I both got our caps in the same stadium. Our first.
No way.
Cap. Yes. You played against Finland. I played against China, but both in San Jose at Spartan Stadium. So,
yep.
And you came on at halftime.
Awesome.
And a 3-0 win, if you forget.
That's awesome. I totally did. See, that's where my mind is right now.
No, all good. All good. So the U.S. Women's National Team is about to head into the Olympics. We are days away. You yourself are a two-time Olympic gold medalist. Like, what? Where do you have those medals?
I think they're like my rear view mirror in the car or something, you know, like just hanging. No.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be awesome if you had it just hanging right on the dashboard.
Yeah, no. I've got them like just like a little box, you know.
Like they're not visible every day?
No, definitely not. I've kept them kind of contained and accessible, but just
let them out. So let them out.
They need to breathe a little. You said, yeah.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, you got to let them out. I would have them like smack dab right by the front door. So you come in, you're like, yes, excellent.
You would, Charlie. You would. Yeah, yeah.
Let's go back to your first Olympics. It was 2004, Athens. Yeah. Really the last hurrah for so many of the 99ers. Do you remember what it was like to be named to that Olympic roster? I know you touched on your first cap and Mia had given you some feedback. What was that experience like?
Yeah, that was, I think, incredible. I was in Carson, you know, at the Home Depot Center or whatever it's called now.
Yeah.
But, you know, coming up and
they've
literally
it like three times,
I was so. Like, I can't keep up. but yeah, the roster being posted, the list literally in the locker room, you know, kind of old school style. And coming up to the parking lot and calling my parents and just saying, I did it. I made it, made the roster. And probably a few tears, you know, shared with my parents on that call. And, you know, it's, I think especially going through that as, for the first time, I think the second time was also special, but the first time, you know, I think it brought up for me just kind of the past, right? And mm-hmm. what it took to get here and where I started, you know, as a 7-year-old, pigtails, you know, playing with the boys, and getting to that point in time, because so much had happened to really create that manifestation of making an Olympic roster, something that I wanted to do years, you know, prior. And also just realizing the support that I had to get there. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's what I think was really special. And honestly, I think has been one of the most special elements about playing the sport is that for me, it's always been shared with my family, with my friends, with my supporters. So to me, that was one of those moments that I felt that was again shared. You know, I think that's my biggest memory of making the roster. And then, you know, of course the rest was still to come, but, yeah, just that point was definitely special.
Yep. So for you, what was the best memory on and off the pitch from that Olympics?
I mean, I literally was on the team with the women that inspired me to get there. Mm-hmm. You know, with Foudy, with Mia, with Joy Fawcett, with, you know, the players that I watched in the 91, wasn't called the World Cup, it was called the World Championship, you know, on a VHS cassette tape my dad brought home, dating myself. But, you know, I think just literally that first game, and, you know, I was a reserve and came off the bench and literally just looking out on the field, being like, holy crap, like this, I'm at the Olympics. I'm here with this team, and just the excitement I think that went with it, and the second was standing on the podium for that gold medal, and just knowing that, man, this is what it felt like to be a team, to have different personalities, to come from different places, and yet we were all going for the same goal and the same thing, and we did it together. And I think, you know, for me as primarily a bench player, reserve player, to feel the grandness of that and to feel the collective of that moment was, I don't know if I can describe it.
No. And you're giving me just like severe throwback to like the Wheaties box. I'm thinking of the Wheaties box with you on the front, just like the two thumbs up with the gold medal. It's just incredible what you've been able to do. And I'm sure you're going to be able to share that with your kids, you know, to be able to say, hey, you know, you can achieve anything. Look where I came from. And, you know, now, you know, I got two gold medals and I was on a Wheaties box, you know, like, so coming off a difficult 2007 World Cup, do you remember the mentality of the team in prepping for the 2008 Olympics, and how was it different or similar to the one before?
Yeah. That's an interesting question because I personally, at that time, was contemplating my own retirement in 2007, right after we finished that World Cup, and definitely went through a lot of soul searching. And pretty much we had, you know, the coach change, and we had almost for me this feeling of like this fresh start because it was a reset, you know, just having a change, and it was a different year and a new tournament with the Olympics. So, you know, I think coming off of the 2007 and the loss and, you know, the drama that kind of happened, I think it was a good opportunity to reevaluate, I think collectively as a team, and then obviously individually as well. So I think my main focus was to get back to that purity of joy and fun that I had as a 7-year-old. And I think that was the approach I took to show up each day, to find the joy in the sport that I loved, and to just work my ass off and, you know, just show up every single day in training. And so, you know, I can't speak for the rest of my teammates in terms of their approach, but, you know, I think it was a little bit of a reset and a refocus after coming off of that World Cup and training for the Olympics and having that mentality. And, you know, I think we know what the current U.S. team is trying to do right now in terms of the back-to-back World Cup to Olympics wins, and which no other, you know, team has done yet. So I think to have the intensity of one tournament and then go into the next is always a challenge. Clearly they mm-hmm. have a little bit of a break with everything that happened with COVID. But I think that was just the reshift and refocus that we had in that 2008 year going into the Beijing Olympics.
Do you think this current squad of women have been able to, I think, reinvigorate themselves, because there are some changes within the squad. There is some new blood, a new coach. So it's not so much, oh, this is the same old team. It feels a little bit different. There's a new flavor to it.
Absolutely. I think they are so well positioned for this Olympics, you know, always favored. But, you know, my personal opinion is I think having a little bit of this time period, you know, and having the tournament in this year versus last year is actually to their benefit. And I think some of the players that are more of the veteran players have had a little bit more time and downtime to rest and recover after the last World Cup. So, I mean, and they're talented. They are evolved, I think, into this great mixture of leadership and experience and fresh energy and blood. And like you said, a new coach who is always very prepared and strategic in his approach.
I'm interested in how you fell in love with the game as a 7-year-old. If you could go back to yourself, why did you pick the sport and what kept you going? Because there are a number of kids out there who maybe play soccer and, you know, their parents say, it's a great sport. Look what it's doing for women and how it empowers them and gives them all these great opportunities. But sometimes it fizzles out. What kept you going?
The orange slices at halftime.
Oh, sure. Yeah. That kept me going.
the high C's at the end of the game. My dad offering Slurpees for any goal I scored.
I got Taco Bell for every goal I scored. So.
There you go. See, the real stories come out.
Yep.
You know, it was funny because I don't think I really knew what soccer was when I signed up for it. It was a neighborhood team. I think I had maybe two options. My mom presented like, hey, which sport do you want to do? She just wanted me to get active and get out there. And I chose soccer. But I think it was like an instant love affair. And I'm so grateful for that. And I have no idea why, except for just the feeling of freedom and running around. And, you know, I think it was just an instant attraction. I think being able to stay with it, you know, I think we know from research that the number one reason that kids leave sport is they're not having fun anymore. I think for me, I was always able to maintain that element. So I definitely attribute that to my teammates and the coaches that I had and my family, just kind of making sure that I was always doing it for the right reasons. I think, you know, as I started getting more serious and doing travel and playing for two teams at one time, you know, in my family, extended family, people were like, are your parents pressuring you to do this? You know, and so I think it was always a constant conversation and dialogue with my parents, you know, just asking like, you know, Angela, do you still want to do this? Like, is this something that you want to do? So it was always my choice. It was always because I wanted to do it. It wasn't because, you know, someone else was forcing me to do it, which I also think was empowering. And, you know, it also probably helped to train me to evaluate and to understand what I was feeling and, you know, to make sure that I was choosing to do things that I wanted to do. So I think I had some early training with that. My mom's a clinical psychologist, so I always say I'm a psycho baby. You know, probably had some good psychological perspective to mm-hmm. offer me during those times too.
Well, good thing you have some banter too, because it would have been rough if you didn't have a sense of humor, which I think is great. And I think you do a really good job of portraying it when you're analyzing games as well.
Appreciate that.
Can you share about that struggle mentally in 2007 before you take on the challenge of participating in the 2008 Olympics and being selected? What was that? I think, how'd that come down to that decision of saying, you know what, I'm still going to keep the boots on. I'm not going to hang them up yet.
Yeah. And it took some time. I don't know if you've ever experienced anything like this, but I think I felt a little bit trapped in the sense of I wanted to be able to talk about it, but I didn't want to necessarily talk to a bunch of teammates or talk to my coach about mm-hmm. it for fear of losing my position. You know, if they, mm-hmm. they knew I had the thoughts of leaving the game. So, you know, it was challenging to essentially feel safe going through that process mentally. So, I mean, I remember talking with Brian Ascuri, you know, about it, and she was a great support and listener to me during that time, and, you know, talked a little bit to my family. But, you know, I think it was a lot of internal, which, you know, I think also speaks to the mental health of athletes and where they can feel safe and secure having those conversations. But ultimately, it came down to me understanding that, you know, I could do everything that was in my control. You know, obviously, I wanted to have more playing time. I would have loved to have been a starter more consistently. But understanding what my role was, understanding how I added value to the team, and really starting to look at that. And if I could show up in those ways and do everything that I could, I knew that I could have a little bit more sense of fulfillment in that respect. So I basically, you know, felt like I still had more, and I didn't want to just kind of leave at that moment, feeling like I still had more to give. So it was, you know, that was my reset point. And I said, you know, let me just give this at least one more shot. And if it's not going to work out, then that's fine. But at least I know I've done everything that I can.
Well, it's funny you say that, because you said, all right, I gotta know my purpose. I don't want to do this just to go out there and do it. If I have purpose and there's meaning, then I'm going to lace them up. You do that. And then Abby sustains an injury.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now your role changes and it becomes that much more important. So were you able to mentally adapt and prepare rather quickly because you already committed to yourself and saying, hey, I have purpose, but now I'm going to have that much more purpose, what I hoped for?
Yeah, 100%. And I'm sure you can totally relate just in terms of, you know, you're going to do what the team asks you to do, right? And what's needed of you. So I think we're all trained mentally for that, you know. I think also just being able to understand how to mentally shift, you know, in any situation, given adversity, given injuries, given, you know, the moment, literally it could be in the moment of a game, right? I think we're trained for that once we get to that level. So, you know, Abby goes down. It was literally our last game before we're going to fly over to China, last friendly against Brazil. And we shifted on the fly, literally me going into the game in that position as a forward, and then the flight over, having the conversation with Pia, you know, basically your role's changing. this is our new game plan, you know, because, you know, you lose such a emotional leader and a dominant force on the field, you know, the whole team is going to have to adjust the game plan, which we did. We open up the Olympics losing that first opening match. So again, we were still, it wasn't like we were in the clear right after that, but, you know, we all had to make adjustments and shift. And, you know, for me, that was probably one of the biggest changes to from 2004 to 2008, not just my role, but just seeing how much collectively we had to do in order to get to the gold medal podium in that tournament.
Is it fair to say that your memories from the 2008 Olympics are the best of your career as far as your performance? Because you were the second leading goal scorer in the Olympics on a gold medal winning squad. Talk about your performances throughout and the team needing you to step up and you going above and beyond.
Yeah, I think probably fair to say, yes. but it's weird because, I mean, the goals that I scored, I'm not taking anything away. Listen, I am so glad I scored goals in the Olympics. Like, but it's just funny because literally I was set up by my teammates so perfectly. And at least the first one I can remember, I was in front of the goal. The goalkeeper was shifted to the side and I did a tap in. Obviously I'm in the right place. I'm doing what I need to do to, mm-hmm. to make that happen and finish it. But again, I think that's what made it so special because it didn't feel individual. It felt so collective. And I think that's also been the draw for being a part of team sports for so long. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely still cool. Something I'll share with my kids, you know, down the road too. But yeah.
I mean, that's incredible. Do you get like a silver ball? Do you get like, if you,
I did. Yeah. Yeah. The silver, because, was it Christiane? I'm trying to remember who was the golden boot. Yeah. Winner. So yeah, it was a fun little trophy that I got.
That is awesome. Where is that? Tell me you got that out at least.
It's right. It's in the next room.
Oh no, you got it hiding too.
I'm waiting to build out the trophy room here, Charlie.
Okay.
Once I do that, then I'll send you a photo of that.
So we talked about you wearing a multitude of hats, and you've done a fantastic job with your transition from playing to post-playing career. You're an analyst. What went into that? As far as your ideas and thinking that this could be something that you enjoy and want to do?
Yeah. You know, I think it was really getting reconnected to soccer again, to football again. I had gone from, you know, lacing the boots up to being in a completely corporate environment. I was working in commercial real estate right after I retired. And that was a shock to the system. You know, I feel grateful that I had that experience to understand the corporate world much better, mm-hmm. Which I've been able to take, you know, with me. But I think I was missing the sports side. I needed to get completely away from it to come back to it. And that was my personal journey. So I think that's really when I started seeking more opportunities in the sport. And that's one of the things that came up. And I'm just grateful for the mentors that I had in my life to really help me get there and also to teach me. You know, we're not given a whole lot of guidance and instruction
nope.
on how to be an analyst, right? So it's like,
nope.
Literally did the audition for NBC and like my first game is the Olympics. I'm like, great. So it's hilarious listening back to those games. I'm like, thank goodness I've improved. But yeah, super grateful that I was reconnected to the sport through that lens.
And what pushed you to commercial real estate? Like, was there a friend or just something that you were always interested in?
Yeah, it was something I was always interested in. So I think, you know, that's one of the challenges that I try to help athletes with too, is just trying to find what other interests they may have. I was the one, you know, back in the day, I like the rolly suitcase with like books, you know, I didn't have all the digital formats at that time, but literally a rolly suitcase full of books of like real estate investing. So something I just always been interested in and wound up, you know, purchasing a couple condos in the Boston area where I lived and wound up renovating them. So that was something that always appealed to me. And so wound up going ahead and entering into that professionally after I retired and spent a few years in it and then got back in the soccer world. And then once I moved out to Los Angeles, got my real estate license again.
Tell me what that real estate license is like in LA with that housing market.
Ooh, it has been something. Again, I'm starting to transition out of it now that I'm with Angel City, but I mean, just even getting the license was completely different because it's state by state. So I think I was able to do a weekend course in Massachusetts and get licensed, and then
Boston,
you know, it was
like
a few months. Yeah, a few months process doing it in California. But you know, it's high risk, high reward. I think, you know, the appeal to real estate is kind of that competitiveness that, you know, that we have from being athletes, and definitely on the commercial side, I think a lot of athletes are recruited into that side of the business.
I'm glad that you went outside of the sport to gain experience and knowledge and using it now back with the sport just makes you that much more well-rounded and appealing, which is what I love to see from you. Using that same hat, the commentary hat, the analysis hat, how do you dissect this current U.S. Women's National Team roster? Where are they strong? Where are they not as strong? I don't want to say weak because I don't think have a weakness, but unless you think differently.
No, I don't think differently. I think they're solid. When you look across the entire team, I think any player can step in at any point in time. I think the only thing that I've been following is just, you know, with some of the kind of nagging injuries, you know, I think Tobin's better, and looking at Julie Ertz and how she's stepping back in and getting stronger. So I think those are always the concerns, right? When you're going into a major tournament, you want everyone to be healthy and strong and 100% once that first game is there, and also for the recovery as well. But I think, you know, and also just having the additional, you know, players now, it's not the alternates, having that full roster, I think it just makes the United States so much more complete and stronger. And I always also look at the goalkeeper positions too, because, you know, it's such a specialized position, and who, you know, your number one is, but then who your backup is. You know, I think Alyssa's been great, and looking at AD and what she's been able to do in the league, you know, a testament to just having the right environments to, even if you're not getting as much on the international level, in terms of minutes and games, I think, you know, she's been able to prove that she belongs to be there as well. So, I mean, for me, I just want to sit back and watch and just watch them do their thing, and not
take
have
your gold
medal
a struggle. And do another cheers.
They're like, ladies, yes.
Cheers!
You can do it. Get it done. we're here to watch this and enjoy. So,
in your mind, who is the most important part to this team's success? Who needs to be consistent? If you had to pick one player, who is that player?
Well, that's a good one. I'm gonna say Becky Sauerbrunn. And I think she typically is. I think that's what makes her so phenomenal and great. And I say that because not just what she does from a technical and tactical perspective, but her leadership and how she can get the team through moments maybe that they're going to need somebody to step up and listen to. And I think she's such a strong leader. She went to the University of Virginia, Wahoo Wah. So smart woman. Threw it in
Virginia
there.
Virginia Cavaliers.
Threw it in there.
Come on.
So yeah, I think more so because of her leadership and what she can bring in that. In that role.
Shout out to the ACC though. I'll give you that.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, yeah.
So what advice would you give this squad given how they have to play such a condensed schedule?
Just lean into their experience. I think so many of them have, I mean, most of them, if I think, right? So everyone's really played at that level in terms of being in a World Cup at least, and going into this Olympics. So I think it's just drawing from that experience and leaning into it. You know, even some of the new faces from on this Olympic team and their debut, but they have all the elements, and also just trusting in what they've been able to do and knowing what they can do. It's just about all the pieces coming together now and just letting them play, probably not thinking and just going ahead and doing what's more muscle memory at this point for so many of them. And I think that's really going to just set them apart.
I hope so. I mean, they better not come home. Yeah, right here. Well,
always high expectations, right?
Little drum roll.
There we go. Give it to them.
Okay, so now the U.S. is receiving their gold medals. Okay, knocking on wood. I'm not throwing out a jinx out there for anybody listening. Who is the player of the tournament?
Carly Lloyd.
Ooh, I like that. That's a good one. Player of the tournament.
Yeah. I'm throwing it out there.
So she's gonna have a big Olympics. I'm throwing it out there. I like that.
Yeah. I don't know what it's gonna be like for her playing time and what her role is going to necessarily be, but
well, it's gotta be major if she's player of the tournament.
Yeah. But historically speaking, this is her time. This is her prime time. I think she's mentally ready to have a little bit. You gotta give her a little chip on the shoulder. And that feel. And she's, you know, one of the oldest players, right, in the tournament. And you look at that, I mean, Formiga, going into her seventh appearance for Brazil, like, that's just a whole nother level, whole nother story. But Carly Lloyd, I think, is going to be someone that maybe people wouldn't necessarily call out as being that person, but I'm saying it here first.
You heard it here. Okay. I like that.
And that's going to be really interesting to watch, too, just how, you know, being in an Olympics without that fan support, your family and everything around. I mean, to be honest, any team, right, that the United States plays, they have to show up, because I think every single team plays the U.S. differently. And it's really how they can adapt to maybe a team coming out in a different way than they expected, but also being able to adapt to different systems of play so quickly, you know, when teams play the United States.
You're right. They got the target on the back.
Always.
They're always. As soon as they step on the pitch, it's the World Cup final. So it'll be interesting. I love Samantha Mewis. That's who I think is going to be.
Sammy
Mewis is going to be player of the tournament in my mind. But
I hope so too.
Plus, you know, she's from Massachusetts.
I know. Yeah, Mass girl.
You got to dust it off. It's nothing.
I hear you.
let's move to Angel City, who made the biggest splash in the NWSL in just, I think, soccer news in the country. It's just been such a great thing to see in the group of players that you have assembled as part of the ownership group. I mean, what? This is what it's about. So can you share with us what exactly you're doing with Angel City FC? Like, what does your day-to-day look like now?
Yeah, so my official title is Vice President of Soccer Operations and Player Development. So, you know, it's a combination of things where the operations side is more of the logistics to help support the first team and staff. So looking at the training facility and making sure that we have that ready to go and set up before the team gets here. You know, the equipment, the travel, the accommodations, and all those logistics like player housing. And then also the player development side, looking at opportunities for our athletes to really be able to leverage both their existing platforms as a professional athlete and also as a part of Angel City, but also to prepare them for life after and what's to come. So really trying to meet them where they are, you know, by helping to elevate them as pro athletes while they're really focused and competing in their sport.
Do you feel that now there's more of an emphasis for players to get involved in these type of roles, where in the past, you know, when we were just coming out of the game, it was, there's coaching, you can get involved in coaching, and that's basically it. Your ownership, forget about it. That was never in the conversation. How do you think things have changed, and where do you think they'll end up?
Yeah, for me, this is such an incredible and exciting time because of just that. I think we're now able to see so many more opportunities within our sport, you know, whether that's on the business side, the ownership side. You know, I think just seeing what's being created right now. And we have so many more past players involved on the business side, which I think is exciting to be able to add that perspective and that element and to really merge the two. So for me, I really see this continuing to evolve. I think we definitely need high quality coaches at the youth level as well as at the senior level. So hopefully that will continue to expand and evolve and more opportunities will be created there. But for, you know, looking at the player development too, I mean, I think, you know, we both know some of the real struggles, right? You know, from that transition after having, you know, an incredible career. And then, you know, what are the options? So I think, you know, one of my goals is really how can we retain some of us and keep us in the soccer space and soccer world, you know, whether it's talking about the sport to supporting players that are still currently playing.
You got that right. And with you at the helm, I think we're off to to a bright start and off to some good things. So keep doing what you're doing.
I'd
love to
that.
See it. When you came together with a number of these just awesome players, what were those conversations like when you started to say, hey, this is what we're trying to do. Let's great idea. Now let's get into action and make it happen.
Yeah. I think first and foremost to have my team again, right. And so many of the players that I grew up just learning about the sport and myself, everything has always been about so much more, right. Than mm-hmm. actually just playing. So I think to be able to team up with my former U.S. national teamers and ownership, to have that opportunity to be a part of an organization that is majority owned, female, and majority female led, I think is just so incredible to just be a part of. And it's really about changing the dialogue. It's about breaking new barriers. It's about opening up new doors and showing new pathways. You know, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but you know, we really are trying to create change within the sport, but social change as well, you know, in using the platform of the sport. And, you know, what's the quote, you know, quiet women rarely make history, or, you know, I can't remember the exact phrase, but, you know, it's ruffling some feathers sometimes, and that can be uncomfortable. So I think being able to be together with a group of women and individuals that I respect and have had faith in and completely trust, and to know that what we're doing is right, even if it's met sometimes with some resistance, you know, that's what we're here to do. And that's kind of our new challenge and the new platform that we're really operating on.
Well, now that you are with this group in this capacity, completely different from when you were a player in the locker room, have things changed? Like, or you, do you still see people in those similar kind of roles that they had as a player?
Yeah, you know, it's actually a really good question, because I think it's almost like when you get back with your family, right? You kind of fall back into those roles as you did when you were younger. So there's definitely a little bit of that, but I think there's a little bit of a difference as well. Like I know I've grown, thank goodness, you know, as a person mm-hmm. too. And, you know, I think, you know, I definitely had a specific role as a player. But, you know, being out in the world and, you know, away from a soccer team and being a soccer player, you know, I've definitely grown as a person and feel more comfortable just in myself and who I am. And so I think that does change the dynamics a little bit in terms of what we can bring and what we can offer. And I think it's, you know, I can say that about everyone in terms of that being a very positive thing. So I think it's definitely a little bit of a mix of, you know, we have that history and going through things together, you know, as teammates. And now we're just kind of carrying it and I think elevating it in a special way.
Well, you talked about being a little bit different because of what you've been able to do after the game, right? And I think with your LA real estate experience, that has had to have helped with the practice facility location and you know what you're trying to do. Has it helped? And what is important for that decision?
Yeah, definitely. I think understanding too, I mean, player housing is something that, you know, is under, you know, under my leadership as well in terms of supporting and finding housing for players. So just understanding the market, especially, you know, you look at the different teams in the league and the LA market is completely insane.
Bonkers. Bonkers.
And, you know, who knows when that will change, if it'll change. So just having that understanding, just knowing some of the people in the industry as well, I think is really helpful. Understanding the timing of when things need to get done. But, you know, I feel also fortunate that, you know, this Angel City organization is very well resourced in terms of a variety of industries and experience. So, you know, I'm definitely adding what I can from my experience and what I've done professionally over the years, but also know that there's more of that even just with my colleagues and in our investor group as well.
Well, I can tell you one thing, you're doing a great job.
And
here's something that I think you've probably noticed throughout the years as a player, seeing it on the headlines where people fail to establish a culture within a club, right? You're someone who prides themselves on building the right culture for the players and for your team in the front office. How do you do that? How do you make sure you get it right? Because there are so many clubs who get it wrong, and it shows on the pitch.
Yeah, I think probably the first team is making sure that you're aligned before you even get to be a part of that organization, right? I think one of the appeals about joining Angel City initially was because I was in alignment with the values and the mission of Angel City FC. And I think that's the first step. You know, if you don't feel like you can be in a position to change with that organization, there's another way that you're going to have to go about things. So I think that was the first important step. And then, you know, a lot of the culture was already established when, you know, I joined the team and the organization, but, you know, it's still partly building that right now, you know, in the startup environment. And so it's saying what you're going to do and doing it. You know, I think being able to not go back on your word and, I mean, understanding what's important to you and the values that are important to you and making sure that that's communicated and that you hold people accountable to that. And the people that you bring in also have to share those same values and that kind of level of standard and expectation.
When you look at the women's game today in the professional league, what are you most pleased about when it comes to the growth? And what for you is like, oh, still not up to par. We really need to improve in this area.
I think they probably go hand in hand. I think the thing I'm most pleased about is seeing the professionalism that has grown within the players. And that's from their approach of how they prepare, you know, for training, for practice, for games, what they do off the field, how they are able to now treat this as a career. You know, when I was going to college, we literally didn't have a professional career option to be a professional soccer player for women in our country. Now that's been in existence for decades. And so I think that also creates a different approach to the game when you can see that you have that option. So that has grown tremendously. And I think that also allows for the technical and tactical growth of a player as well. So that's fantastic. I think on the counter side, it's now we really need to level up our treatment and our standards of the players as professionals, providing them with those opportunities that we would expect a professional athlete to have. And, you know, we have a great model in that when we look at men's professional sports, right? And so when we think about, you know, those opportunities, what exists, you know, we can talk about pay equity as well. You know, all of those things, I think, factor into what we're trying to reach and strive for even more.
Well, one thing that has never been in question is the support.
Yeah,
you sure. The fans, the people. I was inspired by the 99ers as a kid. I remember being like, man, me and him with those cuts, like, let me learn how to do that. When you got to have the Angel City supporters for the first time be around the club and talk about the club and share their passion, what did that mean to you?
I mean, it's incredible. When you think about the support that's been there from day one, from the announcement, we're actually about to have our 1 year birthday for Angel City coming up here in this month. It's crazy to think that it was a year ago that this club was announced.
It is crazy.
Right? So the fans, the supporters have gotten behind Angel City FC with no coach, no players. Mm-hmm. You know, the kind of meat of the organization, right? When you think of the heart and soul of the team. And so that's just so strong. And it's so encouraging because, you know, for me, I said earlier that this sport has always been about family and bringing community together, essentially. So that exists with Angel City already. And I think that looks great for players coming in too, to see that. Anyone who's going to be a part of the organization, knowing that you've got this community of support behind you, you know, that's empowering. And that just allows you just to go out to play and also something bigger to play for. So, you know, for me to see that already in existence is super powerful.
Your fans are legit. I give you that. I mean, right? they're ready to bring the house down. I can't wait to see that first home game.
You
got to
be at the first home game, right?
I'll be there.
You got to be there.
I will be there. I will be there. front row, ready to
perfect.
Go. So did you have any, like, I guess, idea or choice when it comes to the colors and the crest? And I mean, that's fire too. So there's not one thing you didn't get right so far. So
I definitely can't take all
the credit.
Were you
involved in that?
But no, I was not. Okay. And again, this is what I love about this organization. We've got the experts in their respective roles doing their thing and just unleashed. So, you know, to me, what was special, just seeing and understanding the meaning behind everything. And actually, when I first saw the crest and the colors, it was on one of our quarterly investor calls on Zoom. And so I actually wasn't a part of the staff yet. So I saw it kind of from that investor perspective, which was unveiled to us. And I think just knowing that every single element and piece of that was thoughtful and intentional about where the meaning behind it evolved, that it tells a story. It again brings in the community. It pays homage to Los Angeles, a city with the feathers, you know, about palm trees. So every single part of that, I think, was so thoughtful and intentional, and it makes it more special. So people are wanting to rally and make the merch. We had literally lines of people waiting for, we had a July 1st event right after we made that announcement, kind of like a launch event after the crest and colors were announced. And people were literally waiting in line all night just to get their merch. So, I mean, you talk about amazing supporters and fans. I mean, that's them.
Can you send me a kit?
Absolutely.
Yes. Cause you know, I will, we don't have, hey, they took away Boston, and I know. You, yeah,
that
like
was
that
my,
was
my club. Yeah.
Yeah, that was my club too. So I don't have one here on the East Coast. Let me be the supporter, one of the big supporters of Angel City.
I might know someone.
Okay, thank you. I heard also recently you just signed your first player.
Oh, really? Oh, I haven't heard that yet.
I was hoping.
I see what you're trying to get here.
Yeah,
like, oh,
I tried.
Breaking news.
Thanks to Jordy. That was Jordy. She was like, I think you can try and get something out of here.
I'll get her for that.
Are we close though? Are we close?
I think so. I think we're close. And he's been working really hard. She actually was covering the Euros as well. So she's been pulling double duty, but she's definitely in conversations with players and also trying to line up a head coach. So she's been busy getting presentations ready for that.
So you just named her as sporting director.
Yeah.
What went into that decision, and why was she the right hire? I know she was banging goals for fun for a long time, someone who's highly respected, but what made her the right choice for this gig?
Yeah, I think a lot of different reasons. One, she's been a sporting director before, so she's had that experience. She was with Aston Villa women's team and also took over that role and responsibility right before COVID hit. So she's had to work through a lot of challenges, has had a lot of experience in that type of role and the decision-making process that goes into it as well. I think you know, she's got a great grasp on the international game, which will be incredibly valuable for us at Angel City. She's played in the WPS as well. So she's played in the States as a professional. You know, obviously her professional playing career resume is extraordinary and played at the highest heights and been very successful. She's a lawyer, legal background, highly intelligent, very strategic. I learned that she is a chess player. So, I mean, when you think about the role of a sporting director and all the different elements that you have to balance and think about, it's being able to have that broader perspective of, you know, not what's going to happen on a day-to-day basis where the coach is going to be managing and the players and the tactics and the schedule, but, you know, what's the overarching goal of where we're trying to get to in, say, 2 to 3 years? And so that's really key in that role. And that's the element that she really can bring and does so well.
I feel like you were going to win the championship in the first year. And then it's like, how do we repeat this every year? I feel like that's the standard that you're trying to set off the bat, that's why I said I'm already a fan. So send me that kit so I can rock it all in Boston. Are you hot right now?
I'm in Southern California and I am I'm probably like having a heat, hot flash right now. I'm getting ready to travel to the East Coast to call some of these Olympic games. So I'm trying to get prepared for that humidity.
Well, I said that because, welcome to the hot seat.
I knew what was coming.
Welcome to the hot seat. Let's see how you can handle these rapid fire questions. The first,
bring them.
First one that comes to mind, just shoot it out.
All right.
Let's see. All right. Favorite boots that you've played with in your career?
Nike 90s, the 90 ones.
The Nike 90s.
Remember those?
No.
They were the ones actually that had like the little, almost like those little Predator lines on the front. And I had like these yellow, neon yellow ones. Those were fun. That was how I expressed myself, was through my shoes.
Okay. And
so the Nike 90s were those fun, like yellow, bold, just crazy.
My first one was the Vapors. I jumped right into it. Was Ronaldo 98 World Cup, those silver and blue. Oh, fresh. So
that's because
fresh.
You're younger than Vapors, me. So
but we're like the same generation. Favorite LA restaurant and favorite Boston restaurant?
I'm gonna go with Chin Chin for LA. For Chinese food, they've got a couple of them in LA.
Okay.
One in Brentwood, one in Beverly Hills. So it's I like my Asian cuisine, so I'll give it that. Favorite Boston, man. Again, bring me back. I lived in the South End for a while in Boston.
Yeah,
so
awesome place. Now
I probably spent way too much money on restaurants when I was playing there and living there. Kind of like any other restaurants in the South End, like you have to check them out.
Yeah. And it's only gotten better, to be honest.
I can only imagine. I got to get back there.
Yeah, please do. Best memory off the field. Fun moment. One that, you know, always sticks out to you.
You know, first thing that pops up is doing wine tasting with a bunch of the girls after we finished up camp in Carson, and we went to Temecula, and a group of us, and we did wine tasting there. It was just like,
what year?
This was 2005 maybe.
So all the gold medalists said, let's go do a little wine tasting.
Yeah, 2005, 2008. There are two trips. I'm trying to remember which one was the first one. Yeah.
Reds or whites?
Everything.
Best coach you've had in your career?
I've been really fortunate. I've had, and I think great coaches at different times.
We know those answers. Give me the name. Who is the top?
I'm going, I'll bring it back. Kevin Sims was my high school coach, my varsity coach. And I made the varsity team when I was in seventh grade. So he developed me for a long period of time. Was also a club coach of mine. And then actually my basketball coach, Joanne Wren, was really influential as well. So I'm going to bring it back to my Norfolk Academy high school days.
Okay. You said seventh grade? You were in varsity high school team. You fancy, huh?
You know, things have changed. Things have changed since I started.
Favorite stadium you've played in?
Oh, I played in. Does this be domestically or anywhere?
Anywhere.
You know what? I would love to play in the Bank of California Stadium. I've not played there.
Me too. I'm with you on that one.
So I might just like kick a ball around when I'm able to down there. I have to say Klöckner Stadium, University of Virginia.
Klöckner. I've scored there. Of course
you have. Of course you have. Just rub it in.
No, just saying. Yeah, I like that stadium too. Best U.S. Women's National Team trip location?
For me, I always go to Portugal, the Algarve Cup. Mm-hmm. Probably because we had the most ability to kind of do things outside of just being at the hotel and the training grounds and facilities. So, you know, and also I think I've been there maybe 5 or 6 times. So we kind of had our like little spot. We get Indian, little spot. We get our breakfast. But that was always like a fun tournament and just a fun environment to be in.
Fala Portuguese?
Nine.
Closest teammate from the U.S. Women's National Team.
That is a good one. And again, it's almost like the coach thing because
I'm stumping you.
Because I feel like, you know, showing up at different times and periods of life. I think one of the players that I probably talk the most frequently to is Heather Mitz. And we had a fun connection being in 2004 together in 2008, and basically kind of having this pact that in 2004, we said, all right, this is our role for this tournament. By 2008, we want to be starting together on the Olympic team, and, you know, turn of events happened and we did that.
I remember you guys were super tight when we first met you guys in 2007, I want to say, Yeah, I mean, so far you're doing okay. You're doing okay.
I'm feeling hotter here.
Top two things on your bucket list.
Oh man, top two things. I love it. I just saw Leslie Osborne just had like this bucket list that she put on Instagram with her three girls, and I was like, oh man, I need to do that. I need to focus on that. So I think for me, travel is always one thing. So I'd love to go to Australia and New Zealand, and especially with a big tournament coming up in Australia, that would be amazing to be there. So that's definitely one thing. And then I'd love to go to Thailand and do an elephant ride.
I'm with you on both. Biggest pet peeve?
People driving really slowly in the passing lane. Get over.
Especially in California.
Exactly.
You need to move.
That elevated. I do a lot of meditation now because of that.
Favorite thing to do to get away from the stress?
I'm still trying to work on that. you know, sometimes it's just music. I think that's my go-to. And just
Music?
It's rotational depending on my mood, but I'm an introvert, at least 70% introverted from the last test I did. And so I definitely need some time just by myself. So this doesn't really happen these days. So again, that's why I'm saying working on it, but I love like just being in a hotel room, ordering room service and like putting on a movie. So sometimes my wife and I like to try and create that in our house and like, okay, this is your getaway. Like, just go to the guest room. So yeah, I think either music or just, you know, doing that. And then if that doesn't happen, sometimes it's just taking a walk with my dog and trying to just get outside for a little bit.
I like that. Well, you handled it. You did well. Kudos to you.
Am I out of the hot seat?
You can breathe. Yeah.
Jeez, Charlie.
Yeah. No, thank you. You crushed it. I think you've done so many incredible things with your career, with your life, and you continue to inspire. So I know a lot of people will be supporting you in Angel City and seeing you continue to rule the world. So keep on doing your thing.
Appreciate it. Thank you. And thanks for all you do, sharing our stories, you and Jordan. And I like the little dance that you had that you did. What was it? Was it during Euros? When was it? You got on accepting the
Nations
trophy?
League. Yeah.
Nations League.
Nations
that's what it was.
League. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I've been learning some dance
moves. I had to bless the field.
Yeah, you did it. You worked it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Charlie.
So much good stuff there between Charlie and Angela. But Charlie, I gotta say, if you get an Angel City kit before me, we are gonna have some words, mister. But that's it for this episode of the U.S. Soccer Podcast. We'll be back with more episodes throughout this busy summer as the U.S. Women's National Team go for gold at the Olympics and the men go for gold at the Gold Cup. So please remember to download, rate, and subscribe. See you guys soon.